This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Good morning, it is Danny and Gallant, and on this day where I think our country, the world in some respects, is processing the loss of one of the greatest basketball players ever, and somehow even that description doesn't quite capture the impact that Kobe Bryant had. He's 41 years old. He died yesterday along with his daughter, Gianna Marie Gigi, in a helicopter crash. There were 9 people aboard the helicopter. It crashed yesterday morning, and the impact that's being felt, look, it's impossible to get away from it. There's grief here. There's the surprise of loss. There's the idea of lives, plural, taken away too soon, and that impact and question of how do you process that all. Today on Danny and Gallant, we are going to still talk about football, and we're going to have Brock Huer is going to join us at 8 o'clock for Blue 42, and John Clayton will be here from the Super Bowl at 7:15 for the morning drive. But, Paul, we have to start, and we're going to spend most of our time today talking about the loss of Kobe Bryant.
It feels like everything's on hold right now, and it's a weird place to be. When I was 7 years old, I saw how the world reacted to the death of Princess Diana, and I'm not necessarily comparing the two, but I think from a wow, I don't know how to process this perspective, that's where I am. I mean, I found out about it while on a runway in Los Angeles, taxiing to a gate to take off to fly back up here from Miami, and I didn't have any phone for the entirety of the flight, and I was just thinking, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I got home, same thing, watching television, just staring at it, really having a tough time embracing that this is a reality. I did not think I would be this affected by it. I think that, Danny, is what has stood out to me thus far in the less than 24 hours since this went down.
There's that exercise room in the apartment building I live in, and I was down on a stationary bike and then on a treadmill, and I saw on the video screen there were several Kobe Bryant highlights, like just statements about where he'd ranked in career scoring, and I assumed it related to when LeBron James passed him on the career scoring list. And then when I came back upstairs and my wife told me that he had died, I felt the same sort of shock of, man, there's that idea of loss, and I felt really bad for his family, and I feel terrible for the people. Christina Mauser, who was an elementary school coach, girls basketball coach there in Orange County, she was on the flight. John Altobelli, who is a baseball coach at Orange Coast College, along with his wife Carrie, their daughter Alyssa. There are victims and people whose families are suffering and have suffered a profound loss. I felt really bad for all of his fans, because Kobe Bryant inspired people, and his passing creates this, there's this void and this loss. When you have someone, even if it's someone you've never met or have only met superficially, people have an impact on us. Bringing up Princess Diana, I think there, in today's world, we draw inspiration and people are important to us who maybe we've never met. That's the nature of connection. It's the nature of fame, and all that doesn't make that loss any less real. And it doesn't make that grieving. And for other people like me, you look at it and you're like, man, that's 41 years old. It's too short. He had such an opportunity to have more of a profound impact. And he was someone who seemed very focused on the next chapters of his life, and someone being an advocate for women's basketball and someone being a storyteller. And just that idea, that promise, that potential, let alone his 13-year-old daughter. It's tragic. It's truly tragic.
That's perhaps the hardest part. And you mentioned some teachers that are flying along with Kobe Bryant and his daughter to a basketball tournament. And I mean, these are people that are focused on the future, essentially. And all of a sudden it's just cut short. And you can't help but think at the same time as well, for all the athletes that we have covered over the last 20 years or so, how many seemed as unconquerable, unwavering, unbeatable as Kobe Bryant, who definitely went through many rough patches, both in his life, and on top of that, in his time with the Los Angeles Lakers, who were not just an eternal power while he was there. But to imagine an seemingly invincible figure like Kobe Bryant is never going to be able to sit courtside at a Laker game 20 years from now to be appreciated for how incredible his career was, that he's not going to be able to watch this incredible, sounds exactly like Kobe Bryant 2.0 daughter and Gianna grow and probably turn into women's basketball's version of him or more. And it's just done. And I think for a lot of people, the finality of all of it, it's just, it is a very sad yet necessary reminder that this is nothing is eternal for us. This is all temporary. You make the most of what you can with while you can do it. Kobe, for all that he did, I think did that. And you mentioned it. You just wanted to see what was going to happen next with the guy.
Don't underestimate the impact that Kobe Bryant had on an entire generation of athletes. And I think you saw that yesterday at the Pro Bowl, that people will talk about an actor's actor or a comedian's comedian. And speaking strictly from a sense of how he approached his sport, his craft, Kobe Bryant was someone who athletes across sports look to because of his singular focus, because of his competitiveness. And at the Pro Bowl, the teams found out before the game. And I can imagine how things circulate now with phones and watching how the news circulated and winding it back to see how the initial reports came across Twitter and people, the disbelief that was there. Pete Carroll was asked after the game by the NFL Network to kind of try and put Kobe's passing in perspective. And I thought Pete was pretty poignant in talking about not just how the loss affects people in the locker room, but how do you move on from that by these when you're someone who was affected by his passing? Here was Pete after the game.
Pete, I know you shared the spotlight there in LA with Kobe Bryant and the Lakers there during your time at USC. What was your reaction when you heard about Kobe's passing?
You know, we don't have a reaction to even define. You know, he has been such a big part of this whole generation's life in sports and beyond sports. He's been such an iconic figure to us. We've cited Kobe so many times and because of who he is and because of the extraordinary nature of his makeup and all. And when it hit our locker room, our guys were crushed. They all were. And didn't know what to do. We were going to walk out in the field and go play a football game. You know, it didn't seem like the right thing to do at the time. But we thought that if he was going to have a say in it, he'd want us to go play. But he has been just an irreplaceable kind of figure. And we've cited him so many times. It's a great crushing loss.
Having spent so much time in L.A., did you have a personal relationship with him?
Well, we've always bumped into times, you know, and he's always been good to us. He's known that we used his stuff a lot, you know, so he had a lot of fun watching us over the years.
His competitiveness, Kobe Bryant's competitiveness, could be something that was aggravating if you were rooting against him. That singular focus that he had, and I think there's a good chunk of ego that was mixed up in it. But you look at what he accomplished because of that. And I think that as athletes, someone to emulate was the way he was relentless in the pursuit of improving his game.
It was mythological. I mean, you look at this guy and you saw someone from those stories, fables, a guy that for whatever reason just could not be moved away from whatever goal he was trying to accomplish, even if there was a torn Achilles or his body was failing him. This was a guy that had a confident defiance. You saw it. Remember the Kobe sneer when he's on the court? You knew when you saw that, yikes, things were probably about to go south for your team if you were rooting against him. And by the way, I mean, that's where I am. I'm someone who grew up rooting against Kobe Bryant for the majority of his career. There was a brief phase where I had a Kobe Bryant jersey. It vanished in like 2003 or so. I don't know what happened to it, but this is a guy that made you feel a wide-ranging bunch of emotions. How many athletes have the power to do that? And it all, I think, stemmed from that mama mentality, that he would want this Pro Bowl game to be played because that's just kind of the guy he was. And it's really going to be missed. I think especially now, because you look at him, he's just such a curious person. I think that's one of the number one signs of intelligence. And who knows what he would have done next. And that's the worst part of it all.
It's Danny and Gallant. We will shift to some of our sports conversation, but we're not going away. We're going to ask people for their memories of Kobe Bryant as we look at the loss of one of the all-time great basketball players. In my mind, he's clearly in the top three basketball players ever to be there. He died at the age of 41 along with eight other people, including his 13-year-old daughter. It is Danny and Gallant. Here's What to Watch For.
What to Watch For, every morning at 7:10, brought to you by Dublin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Washington Huskies, the toll for the road this weekend was four technical fouls.
Oh boy.
Two losses, one double-digit lead that they blew in the second half again. One time they got smoked from the start at Colorado. The most important thing, Jaden McDaniels was benched for the second half on Saturday. Their freshman from Federal Way, one of their top two recruits, he played only 2 minutes in the second half. Coach Hopkins, Mike Hopkins, is working through some things there with those Huskies.
100%. I was having a conversation with some of my Syracuse buddies about how the Cuse had missed out on Isaiah Stewart. We did not have that same conversation about McDaniels. We talked about him as just a reminder of every single frustrating Syracuse athlete that has ever played for Jim Boeheim. You're seeing it now, and that's the sad thing. I mean, the only way that I think the Huskies turn it around is if he turns it around. Is benching going to be the thing that suddenly gets his mind back on track? I don't know. I suppose that's why Mike Hopkins tried to pull this move out of his toolbox. Good luck. It's crazy how things have gone from the promise of a young basketball team with all of this explosive athleticism to where it is now, where you're sort of just wondering, can they win a game in the Pac-12?
What to watch for?
The Pro Bowl. It took place yesterday. The AFC won it for the fourth straight year, 38-33. Russell Wilson completed five passes, including a 45-yarder to Jared Cook. But, very cool moment, he wasn't on the field for the start of the game like he was supposed to because he opted to have Drew Brees start the game. Very cool moment.
It is really cool. I don't particularly like All-Star games. I like baseball's All-Star game the best. I enjoy the Pro Bowl the least.
Same.
But the one thing about it is I think it is cool for players to mix and get a chance to team up or go against guys in a not super competitive environment that they really admire and respect. And Russell Wilson admires Drew Brees a ton. And I think that in some ways he credits Drew Brees with the fact that the Seahawks were willing to give him a shot as a starting quarterback. But as someone who's been able to do that, I think those moments, or was it Jeter that got out of the way or A-Rod that got out of the way for Cal Ripken to start at third base at the end of his career? Like, those sort of things are really cool in those All-Star game moments.
100%. And also very cool from this game, and not to keep everything coming back to Kobe Bryant, but I really enjoyed the NFC's team defensive celebration where three, five players basically got in a circle and all did the Kobe fade away. It was a very, very cool moment.
What to watch for.
And then the Super Bowl teams have arrived in Miami. And this morning I saw on Bleacher Report that Richard Sherman has sat down and provided an example of how you beat Patrick Mahomes. So the psychological warfare has started in that respect. And then the other side of it, the Kansas City Chiefs all wearing Hawaiian shirts on their flight to Miami to honor their coach. I was amused by that as well.
I like Hawaiian shirts a lot. I probably have too many of them. Not going to lie, though, if you're flying back from somewhere warm to somewhere cold, say like from Miami to Seattle, which I did yesterday, not the best decision for when you get off the plane. Not
did you
at
have
all.
Sandals on?
I did not. No. No, I lost my sandals. I don't know what happened to them. R.I.P.
It was that kind of party.
You came back sans sandals.
I came back missing a couple of different things, yeah.
What else were you missing?
My phone charger. Basically, I mean, listen. We were in a place. It was like 13 to 14 guys. It was as close to a college-esque experience as you can remember. Very fun weekend, though.
No
RIP
phone
flip-flops.
Charger.
Yeah.
No sandals.
Right.
The sandals are gone.
I had like 5% battery life. Somehow that lasted me from Miami to Seattle. I don't know how that worked, but yeah.
It's Danny and Gallant. We will continue to take an inventory of what Paul was wearing, but now we're going to go back to Miami. The Professor John Clayton is down there. It's time for our morning drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the Professor John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor.
Yes.
Your thoughts on Kobe Bryant's passing.
You know, I thought the best comment that was made yesterday was that then you, neither of you guys will appreciate this. I do because I was old. I was 9 years old then. But when JFK was shot, and you remember exactly where you were, I was in fourth grade. I was in the room when I heard about it. And, of course, yesterday I was on the flight. I actually had DirecTV in the flight that I was on. And I looked up in row 7, and I saw Kobe's name, and I saw, you know, from – 1978 to 2020. And I was like, oh my heavens, what happened? And then sure enough, on the Pro Bowl broadcast, they came out and they announced what happened. And it's like, you remember that because, again, a generational type of athlete, you know, one of the best we've ever seen. You know, he was such a part of the NBA, and it was just a tragic loss to see that happen. I go back in Pittsburgh, and I still remember when Roberto Clemente, on December 31st of his year on a charity event, he went down in a plane crash. And, you know, you just remember this, and it's so sad. It's sad for the family. It's sad, certainly, for everybody involved.
And this is a guy who not only inspired young basketball players who have risen the ranks in the NBA, but from a football perspective, too, just any young athlete. I mean, for me, John, this is a guy that is the first athlete that I think significance, someone that you can put up as one of the best athletes that ever played his sport or any sport. And you look at him and this is a career that I got to see all of it unfold. And I'm sure in your time covering the NFL, there are guys in this league who drew inspiration from him.
Oh, yeah, no question. And of course, I mean, and you see it even when you have players talking about how they grew up watching and grew up admiring. And then he was able to give back because he did spend a lot of time, you know, talking to the young athletes and kind of growing them. And of course, I mean, he was so competitive. I mean, I still love the fact whenever they would ask him who is the best ever. I mean, he would never put his name number two, number three. He was always putting it number one because he was one of the most competitive guys. And then to be able to go 20 years in a sport like that, particularly toward the end with all the injuries he had. I mean, just a remarkable player, a remarkable person. And you feel so bad because, I mean, you watch his relationship with his daughters and all that, and to see the loss that they're going to have and also the loss of one daughter, just horrible.
John, no easy way to segue to football, so I'll just make the transition. Matthew Judon was a Pro Bowler from the Baltimore Ravens. He's someone who's scheduled to be a free agent. I saw stories that came out of the Pro Bowl saying expect some trade interest for him. Do you think that the Ravens will let him walk in free agency, or not let him walk but trade him to someone else?
No, it looks like they're going to take the tack in trying to put the franchise tag on him because they have the room to be able to do that, and then to try to trade him instead of getting, you know, a third-round compensatory pick the next year. They probably can get maybe a number two, kind of like the D4 trade, or maybe they can look at it just like Seattle and maybe getting a one and a two like they did in Kansas City. So I think you can see the strategy. But I just find it amazing that here's a Raven team, you know, that lost two pass rushers last year. And I was going through on the plane trying to figure out, you know, what guys are going to get and all that. And Judon's probably going to end up getting, if he was on the open market, you know, 16-8 or 16-9 a year. And, of course, being franchised as a linebacker is going to be in that 16 range. And so we'll see what they do. But I get the feeling that what they're going to do is, you know, kind of put the franchise tag on and then try to see what they can get in the trade. And I'm sure they're going to be able to get a good deal.
We saw Eli Manning retire from the game on Friday. And, John, I'm sure you've talked about this. You've been asked about this a lot since it happened. Do you think Eli Manning's a Hall of Famer?
Borderline Hall of Famer, but I think he'll be in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, because when you look at the numbers and all that, I mean, the number that goes against him is 117 and 117, his record, because that's 500. But he had two great years where he went to the Super Bowl and beat Tom Brady. I mean, his longevity, his endurance, and being able to really never miss a game because of injury, that plays in his favor. So I think it's almost going to be like one of those Kurt Warner type of things where, you know, he's going to be around for a couple of years and then finally make it in. I don't think he's going to be first ballot, but he's a Manning, and he'll be in the Hall of Fame.
It's interesting. He won, what, a total of 8 playoff games, but they were just in those two. Outside of the 2 Super Bowls, there wasn't another season where he won a playoff game. But I would agree with John. There's a debate about whether he should be in, but there's not really going to end up being a debate about whether he gets in, because he will end up getting in. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
It's kind of like Terrell Davis, because, you know, Terrell Davis put together 4 incredible years, 4 years at 6,400 yards total. In fact, they used that, remember, when they were doing the Herschel Walker negotiation as far as what number he would get the big dollars. And, you know, but the problem is after the 6,400, there wasn't a lot there. And so it took him, what, 9-10 years to be able to get in. It won't take Eli Manning that long. He'll get in before that. But I can't see him being first ballot, because when you start to look at the dynamics, whenever he was out there during his career from 2000 and, well, really 2005 and 2006 when he started, I mean, he was never higher, I think, than the 8th or 9th best quarterback in the league. And if you have 8 or 9 guys ahead of you, then it's tough.
Right, and I think that's the most tricky part about this all, is the sliding scale of, all right, well, how many quarterbacks would now be Hall of Famers if Eli gets in? Because he has those 2 incredible playoff runs, but this was, as you mentioned, John, never a guy that was really a top quarterback in the league. Even Kurt Warner, he did have his MVP season in 1999, and there were moments during the greatest show on turf years where you were like, oh, yeah, this guy's one of the best quarterbacks in the game. We never felt that way about Eli.
No, you never really did. I mean, you know, he was kind of quirky as a leader. I mean, a great person. I mean, that's the one thing that I think was so good. And I thought his press conference was fantastic on Friday when he talked about, you know, only wanting to be a Giant and staying his entire career. And this is, of course, after, you know, putting the NFL on its ear by basically saying, I'm not going to the San Diego Chargers. And they ended up making the trade, and he goes to the Giants, and he has a great career. And ultimately, he'll be rewarded by going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
John, what did you think about Russell Wilson passing on being the starter for the NFC so Drew Brees could have that honor?
Yeah, I think that's out of respect. I mean, you know what? How he's always felt about Drew Brees. He's always had that great respect for him, and so I thought it was just classy on his part. I mean, he was able to, you know, contribute a lot from the second quarter and all that stuff, but I thought that was a nice move, and it's not surprising. I mean, you know, here he is, Russell, at the top of his game. I think that, you know, in different years, Drew's been ahead of him. He's been ahead of Drew. He was certainly ahead of Drew this year. But no, I think that was pretty classy.
Do you think Drew's coming back? He's played 19 seasons. It's not a lock that he returns. Do you think he'll play again?
I think so, but I was kind of amazed last week because he says he's going to take a month and start to think about it, and I didn't think that was going to be the case. I mean, you notice the Saints wasted no time. They said they wanted him back. And, you know, now they have to sit down and negotiate, and, you know, probably it's going to cost over $30 million a year to try to get him. And I'm sure that if they do, there'll be a 2-year deal. But you know, I was a little surprised that he's taking a whole month because, again, it's like you want to play or don't play. But right now it's a question in his mind. So I'm surprised about that.
We saw the NFC try for a 4th-and-15 onside a kick in the Pro Bowl. It did not work out for the NFC. Pete Carroll making the call to go for it on that one. Do you think this is, John, something that actually will be on the field in NFL games as an option, an alternative to the onside kick in the near future?
I think so. I mean, yeah, I think probably the best thing to do, of course, you know, they won't do it. They'll do the wrong thing and rush it into gear, is experiment with it in the preseason and then see how it goes and then try to put it in for 2021. But, you know, this league now likes to make rash decisions, and they get to the owners' meeting and they say, okay, let's pound this thing through. We already know that the onside kick is not – it's not ever going to work. I mean, it's one that kind of got victimized by trying to, you know, do what they were doing with the kickoffs and be safe about it. But, yeah, I don't know if 4th-and-15 is the right way to do it, but I think that at some point within the next year, maybe not necessarily this year, they'll do something to that equation.
Professor, we always appreciate your time joining us, especially all this week when you're going to be there in Miami at the Super Bowl. Take care, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
That is the Professor John Clayton with his Morning Drive. Our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. You can hear the Professor 10 to noon right after us, also in the afternoon with Bob, Dave, and more. Coming up next, Kobe Bryant's competitiveness. We've all kind of got a story about what it was like to run into him. I got to witness it firsthand, and we'll hear some of the reactions of guys he competed against about his passing. That's next on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
This is a day to kind of connect with people. And as they're feeling lost, what they're feeling about, if you've got memories or thoughts you'd like to share about Kobe Bryant, 206-421-3776. We will be talking and taking calls about that. Kobe Bryant was a fixture in the NBA, someone whose 20-year career spanned the time. He included many games against the Seattle Sonics, and he was on with Kevin Calabro back in the early days of this station. And he was asked by Kevin about his fondest memories about playing against the Seattle Supersonics. I was shocked to hear what he picked. Here was Kobe's memory.
You know, for me, the fondest memory, which really wasn't fond at all, was my first experiences of guarding Gary Payton up there at the arena. And, you know, he just took me to school. I mean, it was like over and over and over, and they just kept posting him up, and he just kept spinning on me, shooting left-hand runner, right-hand runner, you know, turnaround fadeaway, scoop shot. I mean, he was just schooling me. There's nothing I could do, and I kept trying and trying. And the harder I tried, the more he kept taking me to school, and it was just such a learning experience for me. That's probably my fondest and worst memory of playing the Supersonics.
What's really funny, Paul, is that I would have assumed that his favorite memory playing against the Seattle Supersonics was when he nailed 12 three-pointers in a game. Yet he picks the time where he kind of gets baptized by the glove.
That's him to a T. I think the people that are truly great at what they do are so much more angry about the losses or the times that they were just flat out beaten along the way than they are someone to revel in the greatness that they were able to accomplish. That really is Kobe to a T. The losses, I'm sure, probably still sit with him. And that's an interesting one that he brings up. It's not bombing 12 threes in a game, but I that's just so on brand for him. And, you know, make what you want of the Mamba mentality, but there's just something that's so American about the Mamba mentality. You work as hard as you possibly can, and you try to be as perfect as you possibly can be, and things are going to take care of themselves along the way. You're going to end up being successful. He was able to carry that out, and I love hearing that about him, because I feel like sometimes I'm the same way, where I am more angry about my own failures than I am happy about the moments that I succeed in. Makes me feel like I'm slightly more healthy, at the very least.
I was there covering that game when he made all the three-pointers. And what was unique about that is Kobe was not a three-point shooter at that point. He was someone who took threes. He was not someone who was known for his proficiency. Certainly not someone who was, you came into a game saying, thinking, any night, Kobe can go off for 10 three-pointers. And yet it started early, and it was pretty clear early on that he was finding his range. And we went back and found some of the play-by-play from that game. And in cut number one, where he just starts making shots, and it starts, you could hear it, and you could feel the energy in the building starting to build.
Kobe looking inside to Shaq. Can he make another three? Yes, indeed! Robert Horry comes right side to Kobe Bryant. Bogdanovich guarding him. Kobe for another three! Wow! Kobe's got it. Well, oh, yeah, going again. Five in a row, yeah!
Well, wouldn't you think? Now, you said this is just a thought. Wouldn't you think you guard him?
Horry running the lane. Back to Kobe. Another three. Career high in the first half. Kobe for another three.
One of the differences in basketball, too, Paul, is that you can feel the energy in a building.
Yeah, you can hear it there.
And it's different. And it's not that it doesn't happen in baseball, but baseball's more reactive. Like, the place goes from dead silent to all of a sudden just crazy. And football is kind of this noise of anticipation. Like, basketball, you can actually feel the energy, and then it gets released when those moments happen, and you can feel it building toward that.
Right, and he's exactly the kind of person who, if he is in an opposing arena, you can hear that. You can hear it change, because there are some who love it when a guy gets hot from outside, especially then. We are seeing more of this heat check, guys just chucking from three in basketball with the rise of Steph Curry than we were back in those days. But when someone was doing it like that, man, it could either, yes, create a lot of energy in the room, or just turn things completely quiet. And those are some of the memories that I have. The memories of Kobe Bryant with those late 2000 Paul Gasol Lakers being just an absolute thorn in the side of the Celtics in those great years that they had, where both teams were sort of what they were back in the 80s, less iconic figures than with Larry Bird and with Magic Johnson. But that's what I remember growing up. And when he got hot, especially when he started doing that unbelievable turnaround fadeaway jumper, which I think was just the most artistic shot possibly in the history of basketball. And obviously we saw Michael Jordan do some of the same, and it's something that I imagine Kobe saw, and he says, I want to make this a part of my game. But there's just something else to watching him actually pull all of this off. There was an art to it that made you appreciate it that much more.
You watch the arc of his career, because he came in and he was someone who was very assertive at a very young age. He was someone who came in straight from high school and was incredibly, whether it was sort of orchestrating his arrival with the LA Lakers, to the way he started out his career and all the air balls he shot in the playoffs against the Utah Jazz early on. There was a determination, and he pulled his way and fought his way up the pecking order in the NBA. Gary Payton was on SportsCenter last night, and I think his memories of what it was like first competing, and then he eventually became teammates with Kobe Bryant, but he talked about what it was like competing against a young Kobe in cut number 6.
I posted him up one time, and I fade away there, and I said, young buck, you're gonna have to learn this one. And he was like, yeah, I'm going to learn it. Because, you know, you did it. That was great. And I'm going to get it and put it on other people. And for me to come against him every year and compete before I got with him, it was just a pleasure, because he was always the one that wanted to compete. I looked forward to competing against him, because I knew he was going to come out and have that competitiveness all the time. And then when I got to play with him, you know, I got to meet the Kobe Bryant, just the Kobe Bryant, and that was good.
He's the last player in basketball that I think we're going to look at as the guy who rode it out with one team for the entirety of his career. And there might have been times where he actually did want to get out. But in a day where now guys, and I hate to summarize it just like this, because I think if we were in their shoes, we'd also definitely consider the possibility, but taking the easy way to a championship, that is something that Kobe Bryant would never, ever, it feels like, have in his DNA. The idea that I'm going to go join a person that I'm a rival of because I can't beat them. He would continue to come at you, perhaps from a point where he is rehabbing from a torn Achilles, but you knew that he was still going to do it his way, and he was going to do it to beat you because he wanted to beat everyone.
I don't believe nice guys necessarily finish last. I don't believe that's true. I believe that each athlete has to find their own way that allows them to maximize their performance. And some guys find that through some guys find it. Russell Wilson has got almost like a robotic repetition. I think Richard Sherman builds up opponents and takes,
yeah,
I'm going to prove this person wrong. Like, he has somebody that he sort of fixates on. And Kobe Bryant, I think there was an element of domination, like that he needed and was going to be the person he trusted himself the most. I think that's probably some of the strain that ended up in the relationship with Shaquille O'Neal as teammates. And look, Shaquille has talked about the pain he feels, the relationships they had with each other's family, and it wasn't personal, but Kobe was a relentlessly driven athlete. And a lot of that was because he believed that his team's best chance at success went through him. And that's not necessarily the most, it's not the most storybook portrait of a teammate, but you also look at everything that he achieved in 5 championships and being with one franchise for his entire career. And some of that is testament to his very singular focus. And I think that's a lot of the reason that he made such an impression on people, especially on other athletes. The impression he left on other athletes is something that I don't think we should overlook or underestimate.
I think you go and ask any of the guys that played on the Olympic basketball teams with him and saw just how regimented and hardworking he was and just trying to be the absolute best he possibly could be. I think he showed a lot of players that this is what it takes. And I think that as we continue to go further and further into the future with basketball, we're going to see guys that continue to push the bar higher and higher. But he really pushed it to a high degree in an era where people were all trying to figure it out. You know, Michael Jordan was ridiculously gifted. who was going to be the next person to take that on and do the things that Michael Jordan did to be as great as he was, as he did. And I think a lot of people were constantly looking at Kobe, and all they could honestly do was watch Kobe, because Kobe was doing this all on his own, and Kobe was such a curious mind. He was looking things up from a leadership perspective, and Bill Simmons was talking about this on this podcast. Kobe and he had a 30-minute conversation about leadership and where it comes from. And Kobe refused to let Bill Simmons publish it in an article, which again just goes to the competitive person he was. He is someone that led by example, and he is someone that I think was so competitive about leading by example that he didn't want to share any of the tricks of the trade with people to get to as high as he got to, because he worked his way to that mountaintop that he got to.
If you have any thoughts about Kobe Bryant or memories or reflections or how this has affected you, 206-421-3776. It is Danny and Gallant. We'll continue talking about his legacy and play. More highlights and thoughts from people who competed against and with him on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Going to be talking to Brock Huert coming up at 8 o'clock for Blue 42. We did ask for your calls, 206-421-3776. We've got RJ on the line, line one. RJ, your thoughts on Kobe's passing.
Well, thanks for having me this morning. Just like everybody else, that was just a super tragic thing to hear yesterday and get a text from a friend like, dude, don't play like that. I guess starting with Kobe, I mean, we here in the Pacific, I'd like to send our heartfelt prayers and condolences out to all our Pacific Division, from our Pacific Division rivals and the Lakers. Just seeing Michael first with all the clutch buckets, that would just kill us. And then to have the beauty of seeing Kobe in person, you know, at night. And as a former Sonics employee, I worked part-time in the evenings for him. Just that NBA, there was just a vibe that was at Key Arena that only people in Seattle, we have a whole different thing when the Lakers came to town, you know. So it's like the battles with him and Ray. Come on, Ray 33, him 35, no defense being played, basket for basket. Yeah, I just dunked on you. I'm going to hit a three on you and then come. Just seeing that stuff in person and on TV is like, you know, as a Sonics fan, it's like my buddy who's a Bulls fan actually is like, well, man, why are you so hurt? I was like, man, Kobe was the Sonics was my number one team, but the Lakers was my number two. So I just wanted to say that for the people, man. Kobe is he'll be truly be missed, man, but we got to see some real good basketball.
We did. RJ, thank you very much for the call. Kobe and Ray had an interesting, I don't want to say rivalry. I believe they came in the same draft class. But there was actually, it was very funny because it's 2004. No, maybe it was 2003, Ray's first full season. In a preseason game, Kobe blocked Ray and then kind of stared him down. I kind of looked down afterwards, and I thought afterwards, oh, that'd be interesting. And it was the next night. It was the first night after Shaq had been traded, and Ray had made the point that here pretty soon, if Kobe's going to be asking for help and saying, hey, I need some more help here. If he runs around here and doesn't have a center and all of this, and said pretty cutting things about Kobe and his aspirations. And the next time they saw each other, Ray wasn't playing, and Kobe comes over, walks right in front of the bench and goes, keep talking that stuff, man. There was nothing phony about his competitiveness. He was an absolute sharp edged competitor.
And there are a couple of moments where I'm always going to think of just Kobe, and in those competitive moments, how wired he was. Who can't forget him mouthing the words soft to Dwight Howard? Soft, mm-hmm. Soft. That's one of those gifs that's never going to go away. And there were just so many moments like that over the course of a game. That's what I liked the most about him, because I didn't like rooting for him. And I did during those early Laker days when the Celtics, who I was growing up rooting for, were just absolute garbage. And I found out after a while, like, well, you can't really do this in Boston and get away with it. So I changed, and especially when Kobe and those Lakers played those Celtics in the late 2000s. Like, you couldn't stand him. You actually looked at him and you're like, ah, oh, this guy is out here again doing his dumb fadeaway jumper that is unstoppable. He's getting fouled, and I think half of these fouls aren't quite fouls. But that was the kind of impact that he had. And I don't think that there are enough of those kind of players left in basketball that are that dominant, but were totally fine with being the villain that was going to basically take away your lunch money and say, yeah, well, this lunch money is mine. I earned it. I deserve it. You don't.
Let's go to Randall in Kent. Randall, you have a memory about Kobe Bryant?
Yeah, Danny. I can't believe I'm getting even get through here, but a few years ago, my wife and I were at that Disney Adventure down there in Anaheim, and we're just sitting there in the cars getting ready to go. These two cars, they raced on this little track. I look over, and it's Kobe sitting there just looking at me, and he's smiling. And I look at my wife, and it's Kobe. And the cars took off, and these cars are kind of competitive. They race up and down around this little track. And our car actually beat his, and I could tell he was competitive, and he got this big old smile and waved back as our cars parted. I couldn't believe a celebrity like that. I mean, he's with his family there, and he could have just, like, you know, act like we're not there, but he was actually smiling, a big old Kobe smile. I just thought that was really cool. I'll never forget it.
Thank you very much, Randall. We appreciate the call. There's all sorts of impressions that he left, and someone who did and always was, like, there are people who are reclusive. He was not that at all. He certainly made his presence felt. It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to ask Brock Heward some football questions, but also talk to him about his memories of Kobe Bryant, who passed away at the age of 41, along with, tragically, his daughter, and as well as seven other people. That included elementary school basketball coach, and her name was Christina Mauser, along with John and Altobelli. Junior college baseball coach, his wife Carrie, and their daughter Alyssa. They were on their way to a girls' basketball game. It's Danny and Gallant. Brock Heward's next.